Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like the entire show commercial-free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
How can dog food lead to a tables, ladders, and chairs match? Will Keith Lee or Rhea Ripley be NXT's next Le Champion on December 18th? And how many spooky factions are too many? All these questions we hope to answer for you tonight on this edition of the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event. I am your weekly wrestling recap tour guide, Jason Agnew, and tonight I'm going solo, which means many a guest to keep me company and provide insight far more in-depth than my own. Here is the lexicon on what's on tap tonight. In our first hour, it's the return of the Triple Threat with an all-new pairing, Todd Martin from Pro Wrestling Torch and Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful.com to chat everything from dog food to divorce. Then Dave Meltzer will be by to chat about the Wednesday night ratings war, Dio Madden being dropped from Raw commentary, and the NWA Power pay-per-view. Later in the show, I'll also chat with wrestling historian and longtime Slam wrestling journalist Greg Oliver about his new book, The Storytellers, From the Terrible Turk to Twitter. Plus, a Morrison Mundo Nitro Blaze Spade Impact Hennigan edition of Turnbuckle Trivia and your feedback. But first things first, we're going to take a break and come back to get you up to date on what happened this week in pro wrestling. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. You're doing so on TSN Radio.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
As always, it's been a busy week in the world of wrestling, so here on Sunday Night's Main Event, we try to break it on down for you and give you a summary of all the news that has happened. And we kick things off on Monday. Well, I guess not on Monday, but if you noticed on Monday, Dio Madden still not on the Raw commentary team. Well, don't expect him back, because after taking an F5 from Brock Lesnar weeks ago, it was officially announced this week on WWE Backstage that Dio Madden will no longer be doing commentary on Raw. Samoa Joe will be added to the Raw commentary team on a temporary basis, so he'll continue on like he's been doing for the past couple weeks. And it looks like Dio will go back to wrestling and return to training at the WWE Performance Center. Talk about a footnote in the world of WWE announcers. He's into that Mike Adamley category at this point, but not quite as bad. Really, is anyone that bad? Lita is that bad. Okay, moving on. We're only a week away from TLC, and we only have three matches announced at this point. Now, I was going to say, shockingly, we only have three matches announced, but this has happened before, and because of this, we can't even do a six-pack challenge on the show this week. So instead, I'm going to have Greg Oliver on to fill that spot next hour. And right now, let me tell you what's happened as far as the SmackDown side of things. We have a few matches already announced. Number one is Roman Reigns will unfortunately take on Baron Corbin in not a dog collar match, but rather a TLC match. Will dog food be at the top of the ladder? That is yet to be announced. The New Day will take on The Revival for the SmackDown Tag Championships. And Bray Wyatt, yep, not The Fiend. Let me clarify. This is Mr. Rogers. This is Mr. Dress-Up for Canadian listeners. Bray Wyatt will take on The Miz, probably in his red shirt. That's Bray Wyatt in the red shirt. And I think this match may involve custody of Maurice and Mrs. Kids, but I have no idea what a weird program that they are pushing forth as we wait for Daniel Bryan to return. Now, right after TLC will be the second episode of Steve Austin's Broken Skull Session. So if you enjoyed hearing The Undertaker's real voice on the show, way higher than expected. Well, guess who's next? That is who's next. It's Bill Goldberg. He's going to be on his second show, and I'm sure this will feature some fun stories about that awful, atrocious match that both men were involved in with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 20. And I'm personally hoping for a tease on a potential Matt Riddle program. So that might be worth watching next week. Except watch it after you finish listening to us next week, because we'll be live after TLC. Well, if you thought the CM Punk return on WWE Backstage was an anticlimactic one, get ready to lower your expectations once again for the return of John Morrison on The Bump. Yeah. WWE confirmed the return of Morrison to the promotion this week, which is something that we've been talking about on this show for what seems like months now, and then also noted he'd be on The Bump on Wednesday. And for those of you that are unfamiliar, which I'm guessing is the majority of you, The Bump is a WWE Network show that airs at 10 a.m. Eastern on Wednesday mornings. What a great way to re-debut John Morrison. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Rhino situation. The NXT UK title has been stolen. Of course, that's a reference to Rhino, and he had the ECW title stolen from a bar many years ago, and it was never recovered. Well, according to a report from PW Insider, WWE United Kingdom champion Walter's championship belt, along with his passport and his gear, was stolen earlier today in Chicago following a smash and grab of a rental car. So if you see an NXT UK belt posted on eBay, could be legit. Maybe place a bid. On Tuesday, AEW confirmed their deal with In Demand. That is, of course, the pay-per-view service. And this is a deal for quarterly pay-per-views through early summer of 2021. So essentially, all this means is that it looks like AEW is going to be sticking to four big pay-per-views a year as opposed to ramping up and doing monthly shows. And it's nice to see one wrestling company understands less is more. In other AEW news, or more so AEW performer news, even though the organization itself is not in good standing with New Japan, that has not stopped a couple of their top stars from continuing to work with that promotion. Yesterday, at the World Tag League Finals, Jon Moxley made his New Japan return as he laid out a challenge to Lance Archer. Moxley arrived after a match that featured IWGP United States Champion Archer and Minoru Suzuki, and Moxley did his regular entrance from the crowd and confronted Archer. He then took out both Archer and Suzuki with the Paradigm Shift DDT. He then cut a promo saying he wanted his belt back and wanted to do so in a Texas death match. Of course he did. It is, of course, Jon Moxley, and that's his thing. If you'll remember, Mox never lost the title. He was rather unable to defend it due to a typhoon, not Fred Ottman, preventing him from making it to Japan for his last match. In NWA Power News, they have a pay-per-view coming up this Saturday. It's called Into the Fire, and it's taking place in the same studio setup as their TV tapings. The show is going to feature Stu Bennett, the former Wade Bad News Barrett, on commentary with Joe Galli. Now, Bennett, of course, is going to be the replacement for Jim Cornette after all the latest controversy. Nick Aldis announced this in a vignette-filled edition of the show this past week. Now, the main event on Into the Fire, that's the pay-per-view, is a very TNA-like vibe, unfortunately. It is Nick Aldis taking on James Storm in a 2-out-of-3 falls match. Each man gets to choose the ref for one of the first two falls. A Storm picked Chief Official Brian Hebner, also TNA, and Aldis chose Tim Storm, which is the former NWA champion. If it goes to a third fall, a flip of the coin will determine the referee. There's been some roster movement in MLW this week. The promotion made two announcements on Friday. First of all, Teddy Hart is no longer with the organization. The 39-year-old had found himself in the midst of some controversy in regards to a viral Facebook post that linked him to the disappearance of his ex-girlfriend, Samantha Fiddler, in 2016, which he adamantly denied in a statement he posted on Twitter. And there was also a link to a number of appearances in adult videos. So Teddy Hart, always a headache, it seems. So as one headache departs, another headache shows up. In comes ACH. Yep, WWE's Jordan Miles made his return to the promotion on Thursday night as a tag partner to King Mo. Now, although they have not announced ACH as an official re-signing, he'll be part of their January 11th zero-hour TV taping. ACH was with the promotion previous to his signing with WWE, so I had written that, and then I woke up this morning and I found out that yesterday, ACH, real name Albert Hardy Jr., decided to go back on Twitter. This guy needs to stay away from social media, and he wrote this after all this MLW stuff was reported. He said, "I hate pro wrestling. I hate you fans that you think know it all. More importantly, I hate the snakes in the industry. None of y'all would never say anything about me to me, and all of y'all can go screw yourselves. I'm canceling my shows, and I'm quitting pro wrestling. Chasing my dream was great, but you self-entitled pricks ruin everything. I'm out." when asked about the tweet, an MLW representative then said, "We respect ACH's decision and want him to be happy." More harm than good, in my opinion, signing ACH. Like, just stay away, promoters. Stay away. Now, someone else who had made a bit of noise on Twitter about being unhappy was Oney Lorcan, but he tweeted out this week that he has signed a new contract with WWE, so he ain't going anywhere. WWE also released their latest list of Performance Center trainees. This is a very big list, but the one notable one I wanted to point out, because it has a celebrity attached to it, is Arissa LeBrock. She's the daughter of actors Kelly LeBrock and Steven Seagal, a professional model from California with some Brazilian jiu-jitsu training. Maybe her dad taught her the secrets of the front kick like he did to Anderson Silva. Listen, I bet no matter her skill level, she is getting a contract offer. WWE loves this stuff. And finally, Tito Ortiz and Alberto El Patron, the former Alberto Del Rio in WWE, fought last night in the premier pay-per-view event from the Combates America group. And as expected, at 3:10 in the first round, Ortiz tapped out Del Rio with a rear naked choke. Tito was awarded Alberto's WWE Championship belt for his trouble. If Alberto had somehow won, he was going to get Tito's old UFC light heavyweight title. What a weird promotion, awarding other promotions belts. Anyhow, I wonder, though, what this means for Del Rio and where he may end up now that publicity stunt has come to an end. Very curious. If anyone's, you know, speaking of headaches of Jordan Miles / ACH, here's another headache. Just waiting for someone to sign him. Wrestling promoters can't help themselves. Okay, before we go to break, I just want to touch on a few notes for end-of-the-year programming for Sunday night's main event. First of all, we're going to be here. We will have a show for you each and every week throughout the holidays. Holidays don't matter. Who cares? You got to get through your family occasion somehow. Put on the earbuds. Listen to me and all the people that make Sunday night's main event, because they're all going to be involved. And I'll tell you more about that in just a sec. But first of all, I spent a lot of time promoting the Turnbuckle Trivia Tournament. It is the second annual. Sunday night's main event is the only place that is doing a wrestling themed tournament. Trivia is my thing, and I'm bringing it to you guys. So the first round is going to be recorded over the holidays, and I need you to register, and the final 100% absolute deadline to register is Monday at noon. No ifs, ands, or buts. Noon Eastern, Monday. That's it. That's your deadline. If you're a patron of that level or above, check your email now, because there is multiple notes to you telling you you must reply to register. If you didn't get those and you're at that level of patron, jason@sundaynightsmainevent.com is my personal email address. Email me. I will sort it out. jason@sundaynightsmainevent.com. Here are the prizes for this year's tournament. First place gets 5 t-shirts of your choice from ProWrestlingTees.com. That in itself, pretty cool. Along with that, you get the WWE Encyclopedia, the History of the WWE World Championship DVD set, the History of the Intercontinental Championship DVD set, a Lucha Libre bottle opener. I just thought it was kind of cool. I bought it. I'm going to give it to our winner. And here is something that's pretty cool. So you also get a limited edition Ric Flair internet only figure. I've had this figure. It's very rare. I checked and I've looked at it. I find it on eBay in only a couple places, and it's valued at over $100. So that will be going to the winner as well. And honestly, bragging rights. And then, yes, the winner of this year will play Ken, our champion of last year, to crown a grand champion. I'm not sure if we're doing that on WrestleMania weekend or the weekend after. I got to figure out the schedule. There are lots of you registering this year. I did not hold it to 32 spots. I now regret not holding it to 32 spots, but I will figure out some sort of tournament format. It will work. There may be buys involved for people who did well last year. We'll figure it on out. Nonetheless, if you're interested, it's patreon.com/snmeradio. And we've got a whole bunch of great stuff coming up over the break as well. The annual Best and Worst of the Year survey is coming at you next weekend. It will be in your inboxes. We did it last year. So if you wish to vote on what you loved and what you hated in 2019, you have to be a patron. I will send you a survey. It's about 30 questions, and your votes will go into the pool and will be revealed on our best of and worst of shows, which are going to be Sunday night broadcasts on December the 29th. That'll be our best of show. Our worst of show will be January the 5th. I'm dividing them this year because more voices. This year, I am happy to announce it will be a 5-person panel for both the best and worst of shows. Myself, of course, Dan the Mouth of Ransky, can't do it without him. Along with that, Mark Andrada will join us this year. So expect a lot of conspiracy theories, Bartender Dave for all of the NXT and NWA bias, and our personal Le Champion, Joe Aguinaldo. So all five of us will be in studio, and we will have those both on the radio. If you're listening now on TSN Radio, you're going to get those on December 29th and January 5th. If you would like extended editions, because let's face it, we can't fit 30 categories into 2 shows. If you want the extended editions, you have to be a patron, and you can do that at patreon.com/SNME Radio. Okay, enough babbling about that. You know what you got to do. Hit that website up, become a patron. Right now, going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about AEW. I thought that this week was a bit of a landmark for the show, and not in a good way. I'll do that when we return to Sunday night's main event right here on TSN Radio. Sun is shining in the sky,
there ain't a cloud inside. I'm here at Great Lakes Brewery in Etobicoke, Ontario, Canada, among the bubbly excitement of hearing the transmission of the first ever experience of Thrust and IPA.
Lucky, can is open.
Initiating proper can tipping into vessel. Immediate observation, this beer's appearance is absolutely breathtaking.
Noted. Continue.
Also noting a penetrating aroma of grapefruit, mango, grape, stone fruit, and lychee.
Continue, Lucky.
Huh. I pounded back a gulp successfully. It did elicit a poking and prodding of tropical fruit and resin on my taste buds.
All right.
It appears my palate is succumbing to the perforation of Thrust and IPA. All right, I gotta go. Over.
Well, there you have it, folks. Thrust and IPA. A New England IPA brought to you by the spacey intergalactic folks at Great Lakes Brewery. Drink it fresh, please.
What do you say me and you play a little tiny game? Let's live in a world of make-believe. A world where I don't come from a family that has more money than the U.S. Mint. And with that money, I was actually able to, by the assistance of the bunny, the butcher, and the blade. But just so you know, Cody, I genuinely care about your well-being. I mean, you are my best friend, after all, right? My mentor. So I gave him a little bit of insight. I decided to pick the partner for them.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. That was MJF, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, replying to Cody Rhodes after Cody's promo on TV this week. Now, if you don't recall seeing that on Dynamite this week, and by that I mean MJF's promo, that's because you didn't. Instead, I found that on MJF's Twitter. Now, granted, this video may appear this week on Dynamite, but personally, I still don't understand why AEW is putting this out on Twitter before they broadcast it. This could have easily been shown at the end of this week's show to get viewers hyped up about next week's edition and the fact that MJF is picking Cody's partner. But to be honest, that was one of Dynamite's lesser problems this week. Now, for some reason, there seems to be a real divide between fans that love AEW Dynamite and fans that love NXT / WWE. So whenever I make comments positively or negatively about one side, the other side rises up. But honestly, on this show, as I say, I try to be unbiased. I just report and talk about things I enjoy or I don't enjoy. As I've always said, if something's good, I'm going to say it's good. If it's garbage, I have no problem offering that opinion as well. Well, despite my regular excitement about AEW and how fresh it is, that freshness, it smelled kind of rotten this week. It smelled like garbage. One of my main issues with wrestling these days is that, yes, there's far too much of it. And also, because of that, it's very repetitive. The same style of matches, the same storylines. But for the most part, that was one of the things I liked about AEW. It's only 2 hours per week, three and a bit if you count AEW Dark, but that's a far cry from the amount WWE puts out every week. And with all of that being said, I'm even more confused as to why I watched the same thing three times on AEW Dynamite this week, and none of them were particularly good. Yes, of course, I'm talking about all of the cult-like factions that have popped up on their television. Now, as a listener of this show, I'm sure you're aware I'm not a big fan of the Dark Order. I've always said they suffered from still being half stuck in their Super Smash Bros. Gimmick and half in whatever their new incarnation is. Plus, bad ring gear and the creepers do nothing for me, but I had actually just started to turn a corner on them with the series of recruitment vignettes. A cult leader trying to recruit those that are disenchanted with society. You know, it really plays into what Mark Andrade was talking about last week, the chaos theory. And if any of you watch the show Evil, which stars Mike Coulter, who formerly played Luke Cage on Netflix, just to keep it in the geek spectrum, well, they just did a storyline about the Devil's Messenger brainwashing disenchanted youth. So yeah, it's out there in pop culture right now, because it's out there in society right now, and wrestling at its best is a microcosm of the society that it exists in. So yes, the Dark Order has a chance. But wow, did this week's vignette suck? I mean, the recruit that just wanted to be friends is booted in the face by Stu Grayson, and that was fine. But then, what did the creepers do? Slap him? Tickle him? It was awful. And it took away from the realism and the cult-like feeling for me. But hey, if that one's not working, I guess we can look to cult group number two. The Butcher, the Blade, the Bunny. A group that showed up last week to chants of, "Who are you?" And this week is acknowledged by Cody, who seems to know exactly who they are and was willing to give them a shot in AEW regardless, but according to that Twitter promo, MJF got to them first and had him attack Cody. Now, that had me asking the question, why didn't MJF just have Wardlow attack Cody? That's supposed to be his muscle, right? Also, when did Allie turn into a possessed bunny? I have lots of questions. Because the last we saw her, she was having her hair cut by Brandy and Awesome Kong. But hold on. Before we get to those two, let's talk about the use of Allie. Allie can be an excellent performer. I remember praising her for her work as Maria's assistant. She was tremendous in that role in Impact, as was Maria for that matter. But on Wednesday night, that promo was horrendous. It felt like someone dressed in a Halloween costume doing a bad improv show. And that's coming from someone that knows bad improv shows. Bottom line, Allie is miscast in this role. And on top of that, the last time we saw her, as I mentioned, she was getting her hair cut by Brandy and Kong. So if that's the case, wait a minute. Why isn't she part of their cult? Which, of course, brings me to the Nightmare Collective. Yet another miscasting in AEW, and perhaps the worst of them all, and that's Brandi Rhodes. Now, I don't mind the whole cutting of the hair. Hair and wrestling angles have gone hand in hand for decades, and if done right, they can be very effective. And the whole head-shaving cult thing, it worked well. I mean, I really enjoyed CM Punk's straight-edge society, and at least they knew how to use a shaver on Serena Deeb's head, unlike what happened during the commercial break this week on AEW. Oh yeah, that's another issue. Why was that during the commercial break? Seems like a pretty key angle. But more importantly, why is Brandy playing this character? It simply doesn't work in the reality this company exists in. Brandy is Cody's wife. That's a shoot. It's already been established in the culture of the promotion. We know that. I'd say the vast majority of fans that watch AEW know that. So there is absolutely no justification to Brandy turning heel and aligning with Kong. Honestly, this comes across as Brandy wanting to do this because she doesn't wish to be perceived as Cody's wife and nothing more. But in actuality, I'm sorry, but that's who she is. And that is something that she should embrace. But instead of embracing it, she's trying to play the polar opposite of that character and forcibly do something that goes against the grain as to what fans would expect and, along with that, what fans want from her. It's not good. This reminds me of when Mick Foley started doing stand-up and he tried not to talk about wrestling, but all the fans wanted from him is to have him talk about wrestling. Mick figured it out. Brandy hasn't. Brandy, you're Cody's wife. We want you to be Cody's wife. We want you to play Cody's wife. We want you to rule the AEW universe together. Because the two of you have the ability to be the anti-Triple H and the anti-Stephanie. And that's what fans want. Oh, yeah. And on top of that, the bigger problem that now exists is how the Nightmare Collective angle is affecting other angles in AEW. For instance, in Cody's promo, you know, one of the main angles in the promotion, this week he talked about how everyone around him is busy and has left him. And this includes his wife, Brandy. He doesn't know what's going on with his own wife. Think about this. If Cody is in this angle with MJF, and he's offering MJF everything and anything to have this match with him, and MJF declared in his Twitter promo that his family has more money than the U.S. Mint. So if that's the case, he won't be looking for monetary retribution from Cody. Plus, he's a heel. Huh. What do you think is the most dastardly thing he could request from Cody to have this match? You know the answer as a wrestling fan. The answer is Cody's wife, Brandi Rhodes, and One Night with Brandi. Now listen, I know we've seen it too many times, especially recently in WWE, but imagine the outrage that Cody could play to this. Imagine if this angle was done properly, how it could actually work. And imagine if they don't even do the angle, if Cody ends up winning the match. But how Brandi would then question the relationship. You know what? Then maybe Brandi would have a reason to go out and start the Nightmare Collective and do her own thing, so this angle could be justified. But at the moment, it can't. Actually, at the moment, this angle can't happen. I mean, unless maybe MJF wants a haircut. Then he can spend a night with Brandy. We are going to take a break. When we come back, well, it is time to get into a triple threat. And it's going to be with Todd Martin from Pro Wrestling Torch and Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful.com. That is next right here. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. They say Brandy, you're a fine girl.
WrestlingTees.com. Over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
Right now, you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and you're hearing this ad. Yep, it's a commercial. And it could be your commercial. We've got sponsorship packages available to suit any budget, so I could be talking about what you're selling. For more information, email me, jason@snmeradio.com. Get the message out about your product or service to thousands of listeners in Southern Ontario via TSN Radio and around the world with our podcast. It all starts with an email to jason@snmeradio.com.
Is the triple threat.
There's gonna be a triple threat.
Triple threat.
Triple threat match.
On Sunday night's main event.
Well, it's a solo show this week, and that means it is a rare occasion where we get to do the triple threat, and I've got two gentlemen who, you know the names because you probably read them online and definitely read their tweets as well. First up, someone who's been on the triple threat many a time. He's our savvy veteran from Pro Wrestling Torch, Todd Martin. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. And to compliment you today, from Fightful.com, his second appearance on the Triple Threat, Sean Ross Sapp. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me back.
Excellent. Oh, I'm glad to have you back. And guys, we're going to start at SmackDown and work our way back. And let's start with Roman Reigns being covered in dog food, because we have to, I guess. I mean, not since Ken Shamrock and Davey Boy Smith in 1997 have we seen an angle like this, but at least that one actually resulted in a dog food stipulation. Now, Reigns and Corbin, for some reason, are headed to a TLC match. To me, guys, this is a classic example of WWE's pay-per-view names dictating matches and those matches being shoehorned into feuds. To me, looking at what they're coming off here, Todd, as much as I don't want to see a dog food match, TLC makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense on a few levels. I mean, one, they haven't really done that much to build it up as why they would do the match, but beyond that, the participants don't make a lot of sense. I mean, usually with TLC matches, you like to have people that are able to have, you know, a high-flying, exciting match. And with Corbin, that isn't really his forte. It will allow them to use weapons, which I think will certainly help. And I think they'll probably have a pretty good match because, you know, they will have those shortcuts and Reigns will work hard. But I don't think it's going to be the sort of match that people typically associate with TLC, and certainly what the idea of the match was when it started. And, yeah, your overall point about the foolhardiness of building your starting with your events and then building the feuds around them rather than vice versa is certainly well taken at this point in time.
Yeah, exciting match, and someone who got the nickname Boring Corbin definitely don't go together. And one of the things that I'm looking at here, Sean, is the fact that we're seeing Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin again, and it's just one of the main problems in WWE in particular is the repetitiveness of all of these matches. And I mean, I can't see anyone looking forward to TLC and these two guys. Can you?
Well, if they are climbing that ladder to reach a can of dog food, I am ecstatic about it.
that would have a point, I guess.
That is a visual that I want to use for every thumbnail for a Roman Reigns, Baron Corbin article moving forward. But yeah, that's the thing. It used to seem like WWE would put Roman Reigns in situations like this because it was, oh, okay, there's a guy that the crowd will boo less than the other guy in Roman Reigns. Now, that's not the case anymore. Roman Reigns doesn't really get those types of overwhelming negative reactions, and I don't know that storylines like this serve to heat him up. I mean, I don't think that really anybody with a mind can debate how good the guy is in the ring and the guy can perform and all that stuff. And if this were hot off the heels of the King of the Ring run, I would have been like, yeah, sure, why not? Baron Corbin had a great run, had some really good matches, was hot right after that. But it's after he's been made look like a dweeb for months by anybody of any significance. I mean, The Rock and Becky Lynch show up, and the first thing they do is treat Baron Corbin like a dork. And I don't know anybody that thinks that this match will go any different than Roman Reigns winning and then Baron Corbin looking like a dork more and more and more.
Yeah, I think the believability, like we all know the outcome of this match. And I think that also goes for another match that was promoted on SmackDown this week, and that's Bray Wyatt and The Miz. The only difference with this match, and I was just made aware of this today before recording the show, is this is not The Fiend that we're getting, Todd. This is Mr. Rogers / for Canadians, Mr. Dress-Up in the ring. It's that Bray Wyatt character. That kind of surprised me. You?
Yeah, I mean, I actually hadn't heard that until you mentioned it either. And I mean, I guess the psychology is that nobody would believe that The Fiend would lose to The Miz. So maybe if you make it the Bray Wyatt character, people will think perhaps The Miz will have a chance. And there will be some novelty in seeing what the differences are in the wrestling, you know, Mr. Rogers character versus the wrestling Fiend character. And, you know, maybe people thinking, hey, maybe Miz will beat this version of Bray Wyatt and that'll set up a match with the Fiend, which I don't expect, but maybe that's sort of trying to, you know, create doubt in what's going to happen.
I mean, personally, I see Daniel Bryan getting involved here. I'm just curious, you know, they flashed back in the vignette, Sean, to seeing the Wyatt family and Daniel Bryan in the Wyatt family. So I'm guessing he's coming back here. I'm just curious what they're going to do with him, like how possessed they're going to make Daniel Bryan here. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that callback. I have no clue. I mean, I don't know if he's getting his hair cut. I don't know if his beard was ripped apart. I'm not really sure how that will play into it. I'm still a little confused why The Miz really cares about anything that Daniel Bryan's doing. I know that he tried to explain it in that promo, but it didn't really serve to do much. It's also not a universal title match, from what I understand.
Yeah, that's true. It's not.
So, I mean, I guess you could do a lot crazier things than have The Miz win, but especially if it's against this alter ego of Bray Wyatt, because we've not seen that version of Bray Wyatt get the upper hand on really anybody. We've seen him
get stomped out by Seth Rollins and had his house burned down and all kinds of his Firefly Funhouse burned down. Oh, man, as far as Daniel Bryan, it's like I'm interested to see where they will go from here because I don't know where else they can go. Are they going to bring him back in the janitor outfit he was in
five years ago?
Like,
don't put that out there. People listen to the show.
Yeah. So it is an interesting aspect. The match itself isn't that interesting to me. Finding out what Daniel Bryan does and how they book this version of Bray Wyatt is interesting, though.
Yeah, I guess that there is some novelty in that for sure. And you're right, with being a non-title, I mean, they could put Miz over, which would be quite shocking to everyone. Let's look back at Wednesday night. Todd, I saw you tweet out on Wednesday saying, tonally, NXT feels like so much more of an alternative to Raw and SmackDown than AEW does. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, when AEW started, I was concerned about some of the comedic aspects of the show, and of course, you know, just sort of curious about the way the booking was going.
Of course.
Would go rather. In the early weeks of the show, those concerns to me were pretty much put aside. I thought the show was really clicking on all cylinders heading into full gear. For the last few weeks, I feel like they've moved in the wrong direction. I've liked the Jericho segments. I think they've been enjoyable, but I think booking week after week after week your world champion to do just sort of goofy comedy segments where it really waters down the idea that people are going to have dramatic interest in someone else taking the title from him because he's so fun works against them. I think introducing Dark Order and the Bunny and the Blade and the Butcher and the dark, whatever
the Nightmare Family thing.
Yeah, the Nightmare Family, the Brandi Rhodes faction is. I think those acts are sort of wacky and WWE-like, and then they're just sort of so many acts that are trading wins back and forth on the show that I watch AEW, and it feels very much like WWE, where it's sort of like a potpourri approach to pro wrestling, where you just throw out a bunch of stuff, whereas NXT, you watch it every week, and it's been a very, very consistent show. Like, it gives you good wrestling. It gives you serious angles. There's never anything stupid on the show. It's presented as something that's important. The wins and losses matter. It feels much more like what I think a lot of people want pro wrestling to be more like. It feels like more of a genuine alternative and more of a cohesive vision.
Yeah, I just think, of course, it suffers from being under the WWE brand and therefore isn't considered an alternative. You know, both of you being in the U.S., though, like, I don't have a choice unless I illegally stream. I get AEW, mm-hmm. So I tend to watch it first. We all watch both of these shows every week. Sean, what triggers you each week? Does it depend on the show, or do you always watch one first followed by the other one?
Well, I do a review right after, so I have to keep my eye on both, and we have one person that's dedicated to each one, but I think all but one week so far, the panel has kind of agreed that NXT has had the better show. That hasn't meant that AEW has had a bad show necessarily, but I agree with Todd's points. If you watched AEW every other week, if I did that, I'd be confused. I'd be like, oh, why aren't the Nightmare Family and Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny and Dark Order out there together? Aren't they like a thing? No, they're not. They're just very similar in that regard. And specifically the Nightmare Family thing, I don't know how that gets through. I don't know how you run something that is such a clear, I don't want to call it a ripoff because that might be a little bit rude, but that was a huge CM Punk angle less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same exact thing, except it's not about being straight edge. I don't know how that gets pushed through without somebody saying, hey, let's not do that. That's very similar, and this whole thing is similar to a bunch of other stuff going on our show. NXT has a lot of the benefits that like Todd mentioned, of the wins and losses mattering, but they don't beat you over the head with the record. And I'm reserving judgment on the win-loss records in pro wrestling because right now a lot of people are still getting 50-50. And I will say that they've made sense of it. Like, if someone gets a title shot on AEW, they're like, oh, well, they're 2-0 in singles. And I'm like, all right, we can rock with that. But NXT doesn't necessarily seem to have to do that, but you can tell who's hot by listening and watching and see whose back is on the mat. Like, there's a lot of elements of NXT that I think they're really just thriving with. It does seem like the complete opposite of Monday Night Raw, Whereas AEW, it seems like if it were Monday Night Raw dark, I could believe that.
Go ahead, Todd.
Can I follow up with something there? Because I think it's sort of emblematic of a larger point. Because Sean brings up the segment with a woman cutting off her hair, and it absolutely was very similar to the when they did that with CM Punk and WWE. But at least when they didn't CM Punk with WWE, the idea was that established over a period of weeks and months that Punk had this magnetism about him. He gave this idea of who he was. You sort of slowly bought into the idea that he would exercise control over people and get them to do what he wanted.
Yeah.
Whereas on Monday, the premise of what they did was Brandi comes out there, announces that she's now formed this new, you know, Dark Enterprises or whatever it's called, and then a woman pops up in the front row and volunteers to be part of it and starts cutting off her hair. It was so preposterous that this was a sequence of events that would develop that it very much reminded me of the WWE philosophy, which seems to be, it doesn't really matter if anything makes sense. We just sort of do stuff. Like, I feel like not only should they have not okayed that sort of thing because of the similarity of it to stuff that happened before, but just from a basic characterization standpoint, if we want to have a believable story, how is anyone going to buy that someone's just going to come out there, announce her, you know, her raison d'etre just at the beginning there, and immediately people have signed up for no apparent reason from the fans? Like, it's preposterous.
You know, guys, the funny thing is, I don't even have the Nightmare Family and those factions on my list to talk about because I just spent about 10 minutes ranting about it on the show because it was preposterous. And I agree. What I take away from it, Sean, to your point, I mean, the only reason it got through is sadly, and I hate to say it, is because it's Brandy. And it's something she wants to do, and she's Cody's wife. Yet the better part she should be playing is Cody's wife. As much as she wants to get away from that, that is a role that fans would want her to be. Todd, to your point, you're right. It's like the Straight Edge Society, except CM Punk's head shaver worked properly. And he got rid of Serena Deeb's hair, you know?
And that aired instead of MJF's promo.
Right?
Like,
that's the same point.
There's an incredible amount of storytelling that they do that they don't put on this show. Britt Baker told one of our writers, Jeremy Lambert, that there were no plans for her to cut that promo before Full Gear. She hit up AEW and was like, listen, I'm going to fly myself to Atlanta. I feel like this match needs something. And it did. And quite honestly, that's still probably the best story that they've told with the women's division so far was Britt Baker and Bea. And that was before the promo.
Mm-hmm.
But the promo added to it, and she had to take that into her own hands. I think that they've really got to realign some of the storytelling, and I understand they got a live crowd that they have to cater to, but the live crowd loved the Soul Train Jones video. They love that. They can't love a 2-minute MJF video too.
I will say, though, sometimes they go a little too far because I loved the Soul Train Jones video, but I did not like Soul Train Jones live in the ring. To me, that was a mistake giving him a live mic. Okay, let's talk NXT, though, because I think we're all in agreement that they're on a bit of a hot streak, especially coming out of Survivor Series. In particular, two performers are really standing out to me right now. And I'm sure you know exactly who I'm going to ask you about. Todd, I'll go to you first. Keith Lee and Rhea Ripley. Now, both of them could very well be geared up for huge matches for championships. One definitely is. Rhea Ripley is taking on Shayna Baszler on December the 18th. Keith Lee, if he wins the three-way, could be taking on Adam Cole as well. If it wasn't already in the plans, which especially for Lee, I don't think it was, do you pull the trigger on either one of these right now and strike while the iron is hot? Todd?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I feel like they're different questions. With Ripley, the question to me, I feel like the choice with Rhea Ripley, because she's clearly the top challenger for Shayna Baszler, they're going to have a big feud here. The question with there is whether you put the title on Ripley or if you have big plans for Shayna Baszler, you could have Shayna Baszler, after having held this title for a very long period of time, if she won the Royal Rumble or something, gave up the title, and came after Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, I feel like that would add an extra sort of cherry on the sundae, so to speak, and making her feel like a really important force and a really threatening antagonist for Becky Lynch. The alternative is, at some point, she's going to win the title. Rhea Ripley, that is.
Right.
And you could either do it in the short term and then have her win a rematch against Shayna Baszler later, or you could have her have some sort of schmoz now and then have her win the title later on. I think the latter is probably the likeliest of the three basic scenarios I outlined, but I'd be open to any of them. As far as Keith Lee goes, the question... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Todd, to follow up with Ripley, one of the points there is I believe we do have an NXT UK versus NXT Worlds Collide happening the Royal Rumble weekend. So that could very well be the rematch and have her go over there.
Yeah, they could put it there there too as well. Absolutely.
Keith Lee.
And then as far as Keith Lee goes, the question there is that Keith Lee right now, I agree with you, he's gotten really hot, both from Survivor Series and just from presenting him stronger and the crowd obviously reacting to him as a big star because he's got such a magnetism about him. The issue there is that you still have Ciampa there. And I think as far as like the story they've been telling, the emotional crescendo has always been Ciampa winning the title from Adam Cole. And if you have Keith Lee go in there and win the title instead, you sort of cut off that Ciampa story that I think a lot of people are invested in. Now, that doesn't mean that there could be something potentially better with Keith Lee, but it would cut into what they've been building to before. So I think it's less likely for that reason, but I certainly wouldn't call it, you know, I would be open to the idea very much of going with Keith Lee instead, because I think there's more upside to Keith Lee than there is with Ciampa.
All right, I'm going to throw it into your court here. Sean, what do you think? These two performers, they're both extremely hot right now with fans.
Yeah, I think a lot of how the WWE plans to use NXT at the Royal Rumble, or even if they do, plays into this, because you've got Ciampa, who's never lost the title, mm-hmm. and I could very much see him not factoring into the decision with the top contender match. That way it could be like, okay, not only did I not lose the title, but I didn't lose the match to get a shot at my title as right. well. And that could factor into his Royal Rumble hopes and really just serve to launch Keith Lee into that title match. Rhea Ripley's white hot. That week that she had, she worked with Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, pinned or beat Shayna Baszler. Like that, WWE does not just... That's one they don't do on accident. I was about to say, oh, they don't just do that by accident. But the thing is, they do that by accident quite often.
Valid point.
Yeah, but that was an actual concentrated effort by WWE to get someone over, showcase her, and say, hey, look, this is somebody who can anchor our division. It's not just going to be these four women you've seen for the last 3 years. Man, the thing is, I could see Rhea Ripley having a WrestleMania moment this year. It wouldn't shock me to see her pop up and win the Royal Rumble. She didn't win the NXT title from Shayna Baszler, But yeah, I think that utilizing her to her fullest potential would be great. Keith Lee, I would like to see a little bit more sustainability in his reaction and all that, at least from where he is now. He doesn't have to worry about Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle's big moment is fighting Goldberg, whenever that might be. He doesn't have to worry about Johnny Gargano. He's out of action. So it really comes down to him, Ciampa, and Balor, and how the crowd reacts to them and which one they truly embrace moving forward.
It's a nice, interesting scenario for us to be able to talk about and kind of be excited about. You know, we don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but it's definitely on the good side of things and a pleasure to watch. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to take you back one more step, and that's to Monday and Raw, because that is not a pleasure to watch any week. And I would say, guys, this week, it was so painful to watch Monday Night Raw. It's the worst I've seen in a long time. That's at least my opinion, and that's saying something. Let's just touch on a couple things on that show before we go. One is Seth Rollins. He's aligned maybe with Authors of Pain. You know, the crowd doesn't like any of these guys, but at least Authors of Pain might now have a mouthpiece. Todd, is there any upside to these three guys perhaps being a faction that people just X-Pac hate, don't like?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was higher on Raw than you were.
Okay.
I thought it had its strengths along with its weaknesses. I thought it was sort of a run of the mill episode of Raw as opposed to one of the worst ones. And I am also relatively high on the idea of Rollins joining up with the Authors of Pain. I think that when you've got a heel like Seth Rollins, who's obviously moving in that direction, having muscle behind him and people that can sort of take care of business is, I think, in generally a good setup for a top heel. But it also, I think, fits with the Rollins character, which I think is going to evolve into something of a hypocrite, a guy that says that he wants to do things the right way but is willing to take shortcuts. And I like the dynamic with Authors of Pain and Rollins and Kevin Owens, where it feels like the other three are trying to set up Kevin Owens But Kevin Owens is figuring it out, and he's being careful not to get suckered in, which makes him a smart babyface, which is something we don't see enough of in WWE, and I like to see.
You're right. The babyfaces are pretty much bozos and dum-dums, and Owens is not necessarily being booked that way yet, shall we say. Do you like the pairing, Sean, with these together? Do you see is this a good move for Rollins, and is the character itself a good move for Rollins?
Yeah, I think it is a good move for Rollins. I'm glad that something's being done with AOP. Since the call-up, they've wasted like 90% of AOP's time. Like,
oh, yeah.
WWE does this thing where if they can't find a way to creatively keep someone over without them being the champ or the champs, they just don't put them on TV. And that's so frustrating and a real condemnation of the confidence in your creative that you're like, oh, you know what? We don't have anything for these two guys that are just they looked apart, and they've got the resume too, and they're like, oh, we just don't have anything for them, so we're going to take them off TV. And the thing is, they've had mouthpieces available. Malcolm Bivens,
yeah.
Stokely Hathaway,
yep,
is sitting in Orlando doing nothing right now.
Yeah, Robert Strauss as well.
Yeah, like they're just sitting around doing nothing. I thought that AOP along with Samoa Joe would have been a great foil for the Shield, but the ship has sailed on that.
Yep.
We ain't never getting that now. And, yeah, I love the idea of Seth Rollins doing this because it embraces where he's at on social media right now.
That it does, which for better or for worse, I guess, it is his real personality that people definitely don't like. So a heel, definitely a heel that people don't like, which is kind of rare. All right, final question, guys, before we go here. I wasn't going to touch on it, but let me throw one thing at you. Tomorrow on Raw, it is Lana and Lashley and Rusev.
Oh, God.
And Rusev, going to end on a high note here, Sean. Rusev and Lana will be getting a divorce on the air. At least that's what they're promoting, because divorce court went oh so well. My question to both of you here, and Sean, I'll let you start on this one. What is the possible end game for this angle for any of these performers involved? I like the dead
Bobby
silence.
Lashley, Bobby Lashley hitting the bricks in April and taking a Bellator fight, maybe? I don't know. Rusev's getting cheered. I mean, I think they also knew what they were doing there when Lana came out and was like, you're a sex addict. That was the fact that he got cheered and got over from that is hilarious and good. But the thing is, Rusev gets over any time he's given anything to
yep.
do. For better or for worse, every single time he gets over, and every single time they cut his legs out from underneath him, which is mind-boggling when you look at the guy and you know who Vince McMahon is, because you would never suspect that. You would think that Vince McMahon would just, like, fall all over himself to push this guy and make a lot of money with him. But, hey, as long as Rusev, as long as one of the three come out for the better, I'll consider this salvageable.
Oh, wow. I don't even know if we can expect that, Todd. One of the three? Can anyone come out of this looking good? Maybe Rusev, I guess. But I mean, Sean's right. He's the guy that classically makes chicken salad out of chicken feathers every time he's given it.
He's stalking his wife and her new boyfriend.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, it's not a good, I can't, that's the thing. Like, what can, I mean, I'm sure, Todd, that they haven't even thought of an endgame, and I think that's a huge problem.
Yeah, so this angle has not been a good program. It's been, you know, it's been composed of almost all bad segments. If I'm putting on like the sunny side of the whole thing, I will say this, like in the early going of this thing, like the whole thing's been silly from beginning to end, but in the beginning, because Rusev was like doing a lot of moping and wanting Lana back and getting beaten up, I thought it made him sort of a sad and pathetic character.
Yeah.
But in recent weeks, when he's coming back and he seems in good spirits and he's getting the better of Bobby Lashley and beating them up and at times outsmarting them, I feel like that's been much more effective in making the story feel better. And I don't think any of it resolves around the Lana stuff, but it's mostly just people like Rusev and Rusev, you know, beating up the guy they don't like and feeling good about it is something that feels better. So the more that they have of this in the program going forward, the better.
Gentlemen, we will leave it at that. I've loved our time together, and I'm sure listeners have as well. So let's get where listeners can hear and also read more of you. Todd?
Sure. Twitter handle is Todd Martin MMA. You can check out my my podcast every week with Wade Keller called The Fix. It's a PW Torch VIP exclusive. So go to pwtorch.com, and yeah, I guess I'll just leave it there.
There you go. And Sean?
Fightful.com, and I am on Twitter at Sean Ross Sapp.
Fantastic. Gents, thank you very much for doing the triple threat. Appreciate it. Always great chatting.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. We are definitely tight for time here. We have got to get to break. And then when we get into our second hour, we will visit with Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. It is Hall of Fame time, and a record number of people are going into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. We'll talk to Dave about that, though I don't think he can reveal anyone yet. We'll talk about the news there as well. Turnbuckle Trivia and Greg Oliver in our next hour as well. Stay with us. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Touching you.
I'm Dan the Mouth Lebranski.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old f**ks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday night's main event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old f**ks, tough guy.
Well, when it comes to wrestling historians, my next guest is at the top of the list. You may know him as the longtime member of the Slam Wrestling Crew and as an author. His latest book is the fifth in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame series, and it's called The Storytellers, From the Terrible Turk to Twitter. Greg Oliver, welcome to Sunday night's main event.
Hey, I'm glad I finally made it on the show, Jason.
Yeah, it's great to touch base with you. I mean, I've known you for many, many years, and you've been writing books for many, many years. Now, in this day and age, though, you know, there was that fad of a lot of people writing wrestling books, but nowadays a lot of people want their wrestling blast in 140 characters. So, Greg, I got to ask, like, why continue on doing these books?
I question that a lot,
okay,
especially when the royalty statements come in. But the fact is, there's a permanency to books, and there's that joy you get seeing it in the library or seeing it in a bookstore and knowing that it goes as a gift to somebody. But it also helps really set the record mostly straight. I mean, it's both Steve Johnson and I worked on this book. I mean, we consider ourselves historians as well as journalists. So you're marrying up the two parts of it to really try to set the record straight on a lot of interesting parts of pro wrestling and the storytellers. I'm not making oodles of money at it, but it's still something that's in me. And you see your books even on your personal shelf, or you sell one to somebody at a show, and it's a magic moment.
And Greg, you know, your other books are they're pretty obvious in regards to what they're about. I mean, you've released The Heels, you've done Heroes and Icons. With this one, though, I saw the title and it kind of threw me. The Storytellers, From the Terrible Turk to Twitter. What exactly is the subject matter of this book?
That's a good question. It started out, Steve and I, you know, just figured we had so much stuff left over from Heroes and Icons and the other books before it that, you know, well, we should do something else. And mm-hmm. So we started batting around ideas. And the fact is that most of these guys in general are wonderful storytellers. And often it's not necessarily the main event guys. So like a guy like a Lanny Poffo, like not jobber, but a guy who had a great career, worked all kinds of places, knew all the stories. Those guys tell awesome stories. And that was the genesis of it, but that's not really what the book's about. It's more about how storytelling really works in pro wrestling by talking to all these different people, by going back in history and finding details about the Terrible Turk, you know, headlining the, you know, old Madison Square Gardens in the 1890s. But then it goes all the way up to, you know, Kenny Omega, talking to him about his idea of storytelling and how it's different and how he didn't really want to do WWE because he felt he would be constrained there. And so we're seeing that with his, you know, Twitter war leads to a fight with Chris Jericho, his being the elite on YouTube, being a new way of storytelling, and it's outside of what we see just on TV. So it's been a fascinating development over the years, and we hope we captured a lot of that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you're talking about how storytelling has changed, and along with going outside of what you just see on television, they're using social media for wrestling fans. Do you think that's just something wrestling companies have to do to cater to the audience, or is it a bad thing that you can't just find everything in one place?
Oh, I think it's a little of both. It definitely engages new people. There's no question about it. I mean, when you see Ronda Rousey dissing, Becky Lynch on Twitter and wherever she is, I mean, that got all kinds of traction in all kinds of places you would never, ever see it before, which no doubt brought in new viewers. But as a wrestling fan sitting at home, it's like, I can't get all my info at one place anymore. You have to follow so many different things, let alone, you know, the different shows and all their ride-alongs and all the things on the network. There's just so much to consume that it's actually insane, if you're asking me to be quite honest. I don't understand how anybody can watch even a fraction of all the pro wrestling that's out there.
You're definitely talking to someone who understands how insane it is. It is too much. I mean, even I have my limits. You know, I'm not full-time doing this show. Doing this show part-time feels like a full-time job just due to all the things that you have to watch in order to talk about. And, you know, Greg, with myself, I watch wrestling, you know, actually not so much for the in-ring work. I watch wrestling for the stories and for the characters. You're someone who is basically a lapsed fan for wrestling currently. You don't watch all that much. Is it because the characters and the stories are so much less these days, or what pulled you away?
Well, I think there's a variety of factors. I mean, I was watching quite a bit when my son was into it. He's, you know, just turned 13. He's not really into pro wrestling right now. He might get back to it, which means I might. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of it. You've got to balance your real life, and it's important as a wrestling fan to have a real life. With, you know, what you like to watch on TV. And there's also, I mean, this is a wonderful age of television that you couldn't have said that about the 1980s. But now there's so much to watch. It's like, you know, do the wife and I sit down and watch Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, or do I watch something I really wanted to watch on Netflix tonight? Or do I, you know, sit down and watch the football games today? Like, there's so much to watch. And you can watch every game that's in existence. So it's just a different time for TV, and wrestling's just one of those things fighting for attention. And in my world, it doesn't really get much of it because I have other people doing it.
What's the last thing that actually impressed you in the world of wrestling?
Oh, I mean, I still get involved in some of the big events, like watching WrestleMania. I mean, Ronda Rousey, I found, was fascinating.
Right.
Like, I'd never seen anybody who took to the business that good that quickly, probably since Kurt Angle.
Yeah, that's definitely the one that always gets the comparison there. Yeah,
and that's a very good comparison. And there's just but she was so sincere. Like, that's the whole thing. You could tell she was having a blast, and that's contagious. And when they're out there playing some character that, you know, they've written for whomever, it doesn't always translate as well, right? Like, I don't care about, like, what's the deal with Rhea Ripley? Why should I be excited about her? She's got a good look, but, you know, what is it about her? And they don't always have that ability to tell you. And if WWE can't do it, they're having even more difficulty, I think, in some of the other places. And the AEW guys, they've been interesting. They've been trying to do some of that stuff, right? Like, they've had the introductory, you know, vignettes and telling us about people. But it hasn't been for everybody. I think somebody said the other day, it might have been Cody, that, you know, well, we have so many people introduced, we can't do it all at once.
Yeah, and they are doing it too fast. I mean, I will adamantly disagree with you in regards to Rhea Ripley. She is someone the crowd is definitely behind because she's different, right?
Right.
And she does feel authentic. And I think that's one of the things that you were touching on in regards to Ronda Rousey. Ronda felt authentic for the most part. And that is something that is lacking in wrestling today. Now, since you have such a broad knowledge of wrestling history, was there anything that you found while researching this book that surprised you?
Oh, surprised is a funny word. I mean, there's just so many things you just uncover. You know, like, whether it's sitting down with, like, a midget wrestler, a little person in Frenchie Lamont, and hearing his actual story. You know, and you know, from growing up and the last of the family, and his dad always joked that he was a small person because he pulled out too early, you know, or something like that. Like, hilarious stuff you get from these guys. And then the other end is you get the really poignant stuff where the people have really thought it through. I did the hardcore wrestling section talking to, like, we wanted to get the guys like Shellac and Matt Tremont, the ones that are currently on top as nutty deathmatch people, but they're all sort of flaky, and that surprised me. Like, they couldn't get it together to you know, have that interview, to do that talk. So I ended up focusing on the women, and it was Jules Malone, who was here in Toronto, was one of them. But then I got an email from Mickey Knuckles after the book was basically done, and it was fascinating. Like, her take on why she was doing what she does was eye-opening in many ways. And like I said, it was just a little too late for the book. You couldn't rewrite it all just because you got one great piece from somebody.
So what you're saying is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame series, Hardcore Wrestling, is coming up next.
No, I don't think so. But even when you look, like, we had talked about doing a women's book. And,
right.
Went down the road, and Jamie Kreiser and I did a whole bunch of it. Sorry, she's Jamie Hemmings now. We did a whole bunch of it and did all kinds of interviews with the old-timers, and it just wasn't the right time. Hmm. And then the Women's Evolution comes along, and Pat LaPrade and Dan Murphy are good buddies of mine. So they ended up using tons of our old interviews with, you know, Ella Waldeck and Killam Gillam and all these people in the book. So I'm glad it found a use somewhere. But it's essentially part of the series, even if they may not want to admit that.
Well, your book is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, The Storytellers from Terrible Turk to Twitter. And where can people get it?
Oh, well, I have a website called alloverbooks.ca. That's a great place. You can see all the other books, and I link to some of the reviews and the cool radio interviews I've been on, like this one. But it's in bookstores everywhere. I mean, ECW Press is the publisher. One thing a lot of people don't know is you can go into your local bookstore and say, can you order me this book? And they will. And it's good for the author because they'll now have that on their radar. Maybe they'll order a couple books, then maybe they'll order a couple others from the same publisher or the same distributor. So it does us all a favor if they do that too. But of course, it's available on Amazon and all those places too.
Well, that's fantastic. Greg, thanks for hanging out, chatting about the current product and the book.
All right, thanks for the time, Jason. Have a great one.
Best of luck. Alloverbooks.ca is where you can check that book on out. We are going to take a break. We will come back, and it'll be your feedback next right here. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells.